So I want to start with a scenario today that I think pretty much every developer out there has nightmares about.
Oh yeah, the dreaded spinner.
Exactly. You've got this mission-critical system, maybe it's print management or manufacturing, and you've got a customer literally waiting on the phone. You navigate to a complex order. Let's say it's this specialty business card with foil stamping and a custom die cut, and you click edit.
And then nothing, just silence.
Right. You get the spinner of death. You sit there for 1 second, 3 seconds, 5 seconds. By the time it hits 8 seconds, you're checking your email. You've completely lost your train of thought. And the customer's asking if you're still on the line.
It's the absolute worst feeling. And honestly, in high-volume manufacturing, that 8 seconds isn't just a minor annoyance. It is incredibly expensive. I mean, if you have 50 customer service reps experiencing that 100 times a day, you aren't just wasting time. You are literally lighting operational budget on fire.
You really are. So today we are doing a deep dive into some fascinating source material from February 2026 that tackles this exact misery. It's focused on graph-based product configuration. But looking through this, it feels less like a coding manual and much more like an architectural intervention.
Yeah, intervention is a good word for it.
Right, because it frames this spinner of death not as a simple server tuning problem, but as this fundamental conflict between legacy relational architecture and modern composable products.
It really is a fascinating read. It essentially argues that we have been asking our databases the completely wrong questions for the last 20 years. Today, we're essentially going to look at a conversation, an architectural conversation, between the old way, which is rows and tables, and the new way, which relies on directed acyclic graphs, or DAGs.
And the thesis here is pretty aggressive. The material claims the problem isn't that your database is slow, it's that your architecture is completely mismatched with reality.
Exactly. If you're trying to model a complex, multi-layered product using standard relational tables, which is, let's be honest, the way we've all been taught to do it, you are basically trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. And the friction from that mismatch is exactly what causes that 8 second load time.
So let's unpack that relational bottleneck. The source uses a really specific example of a modern specialty card. This isn't just, black ink on standard paper.
No, this is the nightmare scenario for a classic database schema. You've got a rigid base card, then you add a PT plastic overlay, then spot UV coating, but only on specific areas, two different colors of foil stamping, a custom die cut shape, and then maybe edge painting on top of all that.
Right, so tons of features.
But it's not just the features, it's the dependencies. You can't apply the spot UV until the lamination process is finished. You can't die cut the card until the foil is totally dry. Structurally, it's a complete mess for a relational database. In a traditional SQL system, we use what's called the relational table-driven model.
Which leads right into what the document calls the N plus one nightmare. Now, if you're a developer, you've probably seen this flagged in code reviews. Walk us through what actually happens under the hood when I try to load that specialty card in a legacy system.
Okay, so you click edit, the code goes, all right, fetch the product. That's query number one to the products table. It gets the ID. Then it sees, oh, hey, this product has a substrate. So it queries a substrates table. That's query two. But wait, it needs to check if that substrate actually works with the assigned machine, so it joins the compatibility table.
Okay, so we're already at three queries just to start. But why can't we just write one massive SQL query? Just join everything at once.
That is the trap. You definitely can write a massive join, but think about the shape of the data. If you join the foil table, the ink table, the die cut table all in one go, you end up with a Cartesian product. You get a result set where every single row is duplicated against every other row. You might pull 50 rows of data just to describe one single business card.
Wow, so you're basically trading network latency for database CPU death.
Precisely. The database engine has to work way too hard to merge all those tables. So to avoid that, developers use ORMs, object relational mappers, which almost always default to the other strategy, the N plus one approach. They make a separate sequential query for every single relationship.
And what does that look like for a specialty card?
Well, you added spot UV, so now it has to query the processes table, then the process rates table to figure out the cost, then the press capability table to ensure the machine can handle it. For a complex product like this one, the source estimates you are looking at anywhere from 50 to 200 sequential database round trips just to load the data required to calculate the price.
200 queries? That's insane.
It is insane, but honestly, it's incredibly common in the industry. And the absolute key word here is sequential. One query has to finish before the next one can even begin, because you need the result of the first query to know what ID to ask for next.
Right, because you don't even know you need to check the FOIL rates table until you load the base product and see that it actually has a FOIL attribute.
Exactly. And the math they lay out in the document is brutal. Even if you have a highly optimized, super fast local database with, say, 3 milliseconds of latency, which is pretty generous, 200 queries times 3 milliseconds is 600 milliseconds.
That's well over half a second just for the data to physically travel back and forth.
Just the network traffic. That doesn't even account for the time to parse the query, lock the rows, or actually execute your application code. You are completely I/O bound. You are waiting on the input and output of the database. The system is just sitting there idle, twiddling its thumbs, waiting for network packets.
So the source makes a really key insight here, and this is crucial. The solution isn't faster queries, it's fewer queries.
You can optimize your SQL all day long, you can add indexes, you can tune the cache layer, but if your application has to make 200 separate phone calls to get the information it needs, it's always going to be slow. You need to get all that information in one single phone call.
Which brings us to the core solution proposed in the deep dive today, the DAG, the Directed Acyclic Graph. Now, I know the word graph sounds a bit like high school geometry, but let's break down what this actually means for our architecture.
So instead of thinking of the product as a row in a spreadsheet, think of it as a network, a web of nodes. Each node represents a component, the paper, the ink, the glue, the foil, and they're connected by edges, which represent the relationships, things like composed of or depends on.
Now, the document makes a really important distinction here between a simple tree and a DAG. A tree structure seems pretty standard in programming, right? Branches coming off a single trunk. Why isn't a tree good enough for this?
This is exactly where the messy reality of manufacturing hits pure computer science theory. A tree implies that every single child node has exactly one parent. But on a factory floor, that's almost never the case. The document gives this killer example to prove it. Lamination.
Right, the lamination process.
Think about it in physical terms. Lamination bonds a top sheet, call it layer one, and a bottom sheet layer two together. So functionally, the lamination node is a child of both layer one and layer two. It has two parents.
And a traditional tree structure just breaks if you try to do that.
It breaks completely. You would have to duplicate the lamination node under both branches, which just creates a massive data integrity mess. A directed acyclic graph allows for these converging paths. It naturally allows a single node to have multiple parents without duplicating data.
So the DAG perfectly models the actual physical reality of the factory. But there's another huge benefit the source highlights here, schema flexibility. And as a developer, this is the part that usually makes back-end teams a bit nervous.
It shouldn't, though. It should make them excited. Think about a standard relational database. The structure of the product is rigidly hard-coded into the tables. If you have a processes table, it has very specific columns for things like speed or cost.
But then marketing comes along, as they always do, and says, hey, we're offering edge painting now. We need to store the Pantone color and the coverage percentage specifically for the edges.
Right. And in the old system, you're stuck. You don't have a column for edge color. You either have to add a completely new column that will just stay null and empty for 99% of your products, which is terrible design, or you create a whole new separate table called edge painting. That leads to schema rigidity. You are constantly running database migrations just to support standard new product features.
And in the graph model.
It's just a new node type. You define an edge painting node in your code, give it whatever random attributes you need, and plug it right into the graph. Zero database migration required, no downtime. The structure of the product is defined dynamically by the user at runtime, not rigidly by the developer at compile time.
That does sound incredibly liberating. But I have to ask the really obvious question here. If we are completely moving away from tables for the product structure, does this mean we have to dump PostgreSQL entirely and switch to a pure NoSQL database like MongoDB or Neo4j? Because rewriting the entire data storage layer sounds like a career-ending move if it goes sideways.
You would definitely think so, but the source actually advocates for a hybrid approach. It specifically says, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. They recommend sticking with PostgreSQL, but heavily leveraging the JSON and B column type.
Okay, stick with me here, because I've heard a lot of purists say storing JSON in a relational database is just lazy design. They call it a blob. How is this different from just dumping a giant text file into a database column?
That's a super common misconception. JSON in B in Postgres isn't just plain text. The B stands for binary. It's fully parsed and structured internally. You can actually build deep indexes on specific keys inside that blob. So if you urgently need to find all products that use gold foil, you can create a blazing fast index right on the graph structure embedded inside that column.
So you get all the dynamic flexibility of a NoSQL document store, but you get to keep the reliability and the ACID compliance of traditional Postgres.
Exactly. You keep your users, your customers, and your standard rate tables in standard relational rows because that data is highly stable. But for the product configuration itself, that incredibly messy, complex DAGI, you store the whole thing as one massive JSON document inside a single column.
And this genuinely solves the 200 queries problem we talked about earlier.
It obliterates it. Instead of 200 network round trips, the query literally becomes select config from product configurations where ID equals X.
Just one query.
Just one single query. You get the entire complex product, every single layer, every process, every bizarre spot UV setting in, one simple database read. The document states this architectural shift moves the load time from that painful 200 to 500 millisecond range down to less than 5 milliseconds.
That is just a staggering difference. We are talking about literal orders of magnitude. But loading the data is really only half the battle. Once you have it, you still have to figure out how much the whole thing costs.
And that brings us right to the pricing engine. Because we have this entire graph loaded into memory now, we can use a standard computer science concept called post-order traversal.
Which honestly sounds like a spell out of Harry Potter. What does post-order traversal actually mean in plain English?
Fair enough. It's just a fancy academic way of saying bottom-up. Imagine the graph visually. Down at the very bottom, you have the leaf nodes, the raw physical materials like the ink and the base paper. The algorithm calculates their cost first. Then it bubbles up to the processes that directly use them, like the printing press. Then it bubbles up further to the lamination. Finally, it reaches the root node, which is the finished specialty card.
Okay, so it's just rolling up the costs step by step. But wait, let's go back to that lamination example from earlier, the one with two parents.
Right, the ultimate stress test for this model.
If we are traversing this graph from the bottom up, and lamination is physically connected to both layer 1 and layer 2, don't we hit that exact same node twice?
If you aren't careful, yes. If you were just dumbly walking up the branches, you might arrive at the lamination node from the layer 1 side and calculate its cost. Let's say it's $50. Then a microsecond later, you arrive at it again from the layer 2 side and calculate it all over again.
So you'd end up charging the customer $100 for a $50 lamination job.
Exactly. You'd be double charging, which your customers will obviously hate. And that is where the expert in the document introduces memoization.
Memoization.
It's essentially just caching for math. The very first time the pricing engine encounters that lamination node, it calculates the $50 cost and saves it in a tiny temporary cache in local memory with a done flag. The next time the engine hits that node from another branch, it sees the flag, says, aha, I've already priced this step, and just returns the $50 instantly without recalculating.
So it completely prevents the double counting issue.
It ensures total mathematical correctness. Without it, your graph pricing is just fundamentally wrong. With it, it's not only totally accurate, it's incredibly fast because all of this data is now sitting securely in the computer's memory and RAM instead of out on the database disk. The CPU can just crunch through the traversal in nanoseconds. We have successfully shifted the entire system from being I/O bound to being CPU bound.
Which is exactly where you want a heavy computational system to be. Modern CPUs are incredibly fast. External networks are always going to be the major bottleneck.
Spot on.
Okay, so we've got a wildly fast load time and a highly accurate pricing engine. But here is where my developer skepticism kicks back in. A factory floor isn't a static environment. Machines break down, paper jams happen, operators make mistakes. How on earth do we track the live state of this massive complex graph as it physically moves through the real world?
That is undoubtedly the hardest part. In a legacy relational system, you usually just have a status column. You literally just overwrite the word pending with the word printing.
Which is super simple.
It's simple, but it's really dangerous because you instantly lose the history. You don't know exactly when it changed or who changed it or if it changed back and forth 5 different times because the die cutter kept jamming.
And this leads us directly into event sourcing.
Right. Instead of destructively overwriting a status field, we record a stream of immutable events. We write a permanent record that says node started at 10 a.m., then a bit later, node completed at 10:15 a.m., or even waste recorded 50 sheets.
So the status of the job isn't a discrete thing stored in a little box. It's dynamically calculated as the sum of all the events that have happened so far.
Correct. It gives you a granular production tracking system and an absolutely perfect audit trail. But there is a catch. It makes reading the data a lot harder. If I'm a manager and I just want to see a simple list of all my active jobs, I absolutely do not want to computationally replay a million historical events every single time I refresh my dashboard.
Because that would just be the spinner of death all over again.
Exactly. Which is exactly why the architecture introduces CQRS, Command Query Responsibility Segregation.
That is a massive mouthful.
It's a huge concept, but the core idea is surprisingly simple in practice. It just means you split your data architecture into two completely separate piles. The right side is your complex DAG and your event store. That's for the heavy engine. The read side is just a simple flat table optimized purely for display speed.
Give me a concrete example of the read side in this context.
Think of a digital job board hanging on the factory floor. The guy running the printing press doesn't care about the directed acyclic graph or the post-order traversal algorithms. He literally just wants to know the job name, the current station, and the deadline.
Right. He just wants a flat list.
Right. So with CQRS, every single time an event happens on the back end, like a job started event, a lightweight background process catches that specific event and updates a heavily simplified job board table. When the front end dashboard loads, it just reads that one flat table. It doesn't ever touch the complex graph engine at all.
So you have a super complex engine handling the deep logic and a super simple table handling the visual display. That logically makes perfect sense. But I'm looking at section 6 of the source material, and it brings us crashing back down to earth with a reality check. The expert in the transcript actually calls it the honest bottleneck.
And honestly, this is the most critical part of the entire document for any technical manager or lead architect out there listening. The real bottleneck here isn't the technology, it's the talent.
Yeah, because this sounds amazing on paper. But if I look at a standard development team, they're all mostly SQL developers. They know how to write select star from tables. If I drop a directed acyclic graph architecture with event sourcing and CQRS on them on a Monday morning, half of them are going to quit. Is this architecture actually maintainable for a normal mid-sized company?
That is the very honest risk. The source document is pretty blunt about this. If you decide to build a custom Ferrari, you simply can't hire a mechanic who only knows how to change the oil on a Toyota. Domain-driven design, event sourcing, complex graph traversal, these are genuinely advanced architectural concepts.
So you are explicitly trading operational complexity, like dealing with a slow database, for deep code complexity.
Yes. And hiring for that is fundamentally harder. If you lose your lead architect, the person who actually understands why the graph has to be traversed post-order, and you replace them with a junior SQL developer, you are in serious, serious trouble.
And there's another operational risk that really stood out to me here, eventual consistency.
Ah, yes, the famous side effect of CQRS.
Because eventual consistency sounds totally fine if I'm building, you know, a social media app and my count is off by one for a few seconds, nobody cares. But if I'm running $1 million printing press and the dashboard clearly says stop, but the back end hasn't finished processing the event yet, that is a physical safety and operational problem.
It really is. When an operator clicks complete on their terminal, the event is written to the core system instantly. But it might take 1 to 5 seconds for that background sync process to actually update the flat job board table.
So for 5 seconds, the dashboard might still physically display pending, even though the operator clearly just clicked done.
Right. In a simple CRU app, that basically never happens. In this event-driven architecture, it's a structural guarantee. The document warns that your UI layer needs to be much smarter. It can't just passively display the database state. It has to optimistically update the UI locally while the backend catches up. So again, you are trading database complexity for front-end complexity.
The document also addresses the massive elephant in the room, migration. If a company has 500,000 lines of legacy relational code, you obviously can't just rewrite that over a long weekend.
No. And the material practically begs you not to try. They highly suggest using the strangler fig pattern.
Like the actual plant. The one that grows around a host tree and eventually just smothers and replaces it.
Exactly like that. You essentially plant the brand new system, the graph engine, right next to the old legacy system. You do not replace the old one yet. You just build the graph engine to handle one specific thing, like just the pricing calculations.
But how do you actually know it works? This graph math is wildly complex. If the new engine is off by a single penny on a quote, the company loses money or loses the bid.
This is hands down the best practical advice in the whole deep dive. Shadow quotes.
Shadow quotes.
You run both systems in parallel. Every single time a user requests a price on the live website, you run it through the old legacy system to show the user the actual price. But in the background, completely invisibly to the user, you run the exact same request through the new graph engine.
And then you just compare the outputs.
You log any difference. The document establishes a very strict rule for this. If the price differs by more than 1%, it is flagged as a bug in the graph engine. You do not go live until that error log is completely empty.
That is incredibly smart. You are fully validating the new math in the background with real, live production data without risking a single actual customer order.
It's really the only safe way to swap out the engine of an airplane while it's actively flying. Once the shadow quotes match perfectly 100% of the time, then and only then do you flip the switch.
Wow. So we've covered a ton of ground here today, from the nightmare of relational bottlenecks all the way to high-speed graph velocity. If you were sitting there listening to this and thinking, do I actually need to do this? Is it really worth the massive hiring headache? The document offers a pretty solid litmus test.
It's a really simple heuristic. You just ask yourself, when I load this specific data, do I always need the complete unit to work on it? If you are loading a product to price it, to manufacture it, or to ship it, you need the whole complex thing. That is a document, and that works vastly better in a graph.
And the flip side of that rule.
If you frequently need to query one specific isolated field across thousands of completely unrelated rows, like, find me all customers who happen to live in California. That is fundamentally a relational table.
Use the right tool for the job. Don't use a highly complex graph to store your simple accounting ledger. And don't try to use a rigid relational table to store a dynamic, multi-layered product configuration.
Right. Organizational inertia is a very powerful force. It's easy to stick with what you know. But as this deep dive really illustrates, the speed difference here isn't just incremental. We aren't talking about making the app 10% faster. We are talking about moving from seconds of waiting to single-digit milliseconds. That completely changes the end-user experience.
And here's where it gets really interesting to me. The document ends on a thought that I really want to leave with everyone listening. The massive speed difference we are talking about is architectural. You cannot simply index your way out of a fundamentally bad architecture.
No, you really can't. You can patch it, you can hide it behind caching layers, but you cannot fix the underlying physics of how the data is stored and retrieved.
But the open question remains, is your development team actually ready to trade the familiar comfort of SQL for the deep complexity of event sourcing just to get that speed? The underlying technology works perfectly, the mathematical algorithms are proven, but that talent gap might just be the real hidden bottleneck in your organization.
It's the ultimate trade-off. You are trading heavy operational complexity for raw, unadulterated performance and extreme flexibility. For a high-volume enterprise manufacturer, that trade is absolutely worth it. For a tiny local shop doing 10 orders a day, maybe just stick with basic SQL and let the spinner spin for a few seconds.
That is a very provocative thought to end on. If you're staring at a spinner on your screen today, maybe it's time to stop blaming the database server and start looking at the graph. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Always a pleasure to traverse the architecture with you.
We'll see you on the next deep dive.